poeta, un artesano y un profeta.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls as usual. Tonight is open forum. Tonight is the normal open forum phone number, 713-526-5738. As usual, I got some stuff I've run across, but, you know, it's open forum. If you have something else you want to talk about, please don't hesitate. So, I guess starting a little local, there was an article in cron.com, where should Houston's innovation district be? Apparently, there are a couple of task forces. They're trying to decide if they can put together like a tech alley or a tech area that will kind of do for Houston, I guess, what San Francisco, what they call SOMA. Now, they didn't define this, which annoyed me. I actually wrote to the writer of this article. They're talking about either putting it in Edo or Montrose, and they refer to San Francisco's SOMA. Now, I edit science papers. Generally, when you use some kind of an industry term, you know, some kind of jargon, generally, like one of the terms we use in the papers, because my wife works in this area, GHSR, growth hormone secretagogue receptor. You don't just throw GHSR into a paper. It's GHSR, parenthesis, growth hormone secretagogue receptor, GHSR. And then you can use GHSR through the paper, and you've at least done your due diligence and explained what this is. I actually had to go to Google to find out what the heck Edo is. It's East Downtown. If they had said EDT, I could have figured that out, maybe, but it should have been defined. And that's not just the writer's fault, that's the editor's fault. Anyway, to get back to the point, so they want to do this innovation district. Apparently, they had one called Start Houston, but they lost their lease because the owner was made an offer for the building he couldn't refuse. They're looking to start a new one. His feeling is that wherever the incubator goes, that's going to be where the innovation district ends up. So it's kind of like a free enterprise. However it works out, and all the political stuff is kind of nonsense. I was just annoyed that they wrote an article that was of interest, and they didn't allow for the possibility that there may be people who don't know what EADO stands for and made no provision for that. So it's like it wasn't written for the casual reader. It was written for, I don't know, people in the industry. So there's that. Houston's trying to be San Francisco. Another interesting article I found from the New York Times was, to make sense of American politics, immigrants find clues from lands they left. I have to admit, I don't think that that title quite captured the entire flavor of the article. But for example, there's one gentleman who grew up in Syria, and he said, just replace the English words. This is about that cabinet meeting where the sycophants, I'm not sure of the pronunciation, in Trump's cabinet were just talking about their delight to be working for him. And Mr. Alatasi says, oh, my God, he says, just replace the English words with Arabic words and you have a Syrian cabinet meeting. I left the Middle East for that reason. And then there's Steve Lee. Steve Lee was born in South Vietnam, came to the U.S. when he was 7 years old, became a physician, the third consecutive Vietnamese-American to represent District F on the Houston City Council. He's a Republican. And while he says he has never seen America more divided, he adds that nothing happening now compares to the world his parents left in Vietnam. The president's cabinet meeting bothered Johannes, and I'm going to struggle with this, Tesfagabir, who came to the United States from Eritrea. Eritrea's only president since independence has been ruling since the 1990s, and he says the country is known as the North Korea of Africa. Sounds like a place to visit. I bet they wish they were still attached to Ethiopia, a lot of people. Last year, the UN Commission of Inquiry said the National Service Program amounted to a form of slavery and accused the leaders of Eritrea of other crimes against humanity. So the scene in Washington, again, reminded him of a scene in Eritrea. It's reminiscent, he said, of the one-man show. Everyone working for the president instead of working for the country. It was very suspicious. And the article goes on like that. I have a lot of quotes that I took just in case I wanted to use them. But that's kind of the flavor of it. So, you know, some of these people are Republicans. Some of them are Democrats. Some of these immigrants to America from different countries in Africa and the Middle East and even Russia. Actually, there's a Russian one that I think is kind of interesting. Sophia Grinblatt, the executive director of Houston's Russian Cultural Center, said she was appalled at the unrestrained hostility toward Mr. Trump on display in popular culture. She came to the U.S. from Soviet-era Ukraine in 1990. Referred specifically to the Kathy Griffin incident with Trump's head and the production of Julius Caesar in Central Park, where a Trump-like figure was assassinated. She says, I've spent 27 years here, and I never hear anything in the media so anti-presidential never ever in my life. Let's see. She serves as editor-in-chief of a Russian-language newspaper called Our Texas. And she said the media coverage was unbalanced in both Russia. See, this is what I call false equivalence. The media coverage was unbalanced in both Russia and the United States, largely pro-Putin there, anti-Trump here. She says, quote, the situation is going more and more similar to Russia. Well, if it was going more and more similar to Russia, I think you'd have more pro-Trump media here. And thank God we don't. Well, I think that pretty much covers that story. I mean, it's a really interesting article. You can go to my website, ThinkWing. Actually, I haven't posted it yet, but when I do post it, you can go to thinkwingradio.com and I will have pasted. I knew there was something I forgot to do, and I will have pasted all this stuff with article links into my blog post for the show when I post the audio. Also, you can follow me at ThinkWing Radio on Twitter, and I would say humbly that I think I post and retweet some interesting stuff, so you might find that you enjoy it or find it fun or informative or whatever. I even sometimes will post kitten and puppy pictures, so I'm very general interest. In any case, we do have open forum. The phone number is 713-526-5738. Among other things we'll get to, I'm going to get to Jerry in just a moment. We do have open lines. So we're going to talk a little about the voter fraud panel with Kobach. We're going to talk about Trump and Hamburg. Oh, that went well. This is a topic I was thinking of bringing up last week, but we never got to it. How many Americans does it take for, and this is not a light bulb joke, how many Americans does it take for Trump to become a strongman? Now, those of you who've listened to the show for a while know that I kind of subscribe to what I call a 40-20-40 theory, which is about 40% of the public will always support the Republican, 40% will always support the Democrat. Of the 20%, 5% will lean Republican, 5% will lean Democratic, and that 10% that's left over, that's actually the swing vote. So, you know, even right now, Trump has something like a 35%. He's got very high negatives, but he's got like a 35% approval rating. There's a story that I want to tell. I swear to God, I'm going to get to the callers momentarily. But there's a story I want to tell. You know, many of us have dropped virulent pro-Trumpers from our Facebook follows and Twitter follows and things like that. I have a couple of old friends that I've known. I mean, they don't live in Houston anymore. They moved out of Houston, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. They're going to be moving back shortly, I'm told. And when I was a window covering installer, and she was an interior designer, and they were good friends to me, and they were particularly good friends to me when I was in desperate need of good friends. They're not stupid people. They're smart. They're successful in ways that most people consider matter. And yet they are pro-Trump. I mean, they are. There's no ambivalence that I can see from the post that I have run across from one of them. The husband doesn't so much post, but the wife does. And, I mean, I love them as friends. I don't have the heart to unfriend them. I don't have the heart to unfollow them. They're friends. You know, they were there for me. And, you know, it's one of those very, very personal dilemmas. Not so much should I unfollow them or not. That's not the dilemma. The dilemma is, I know these people. How can they have started off pro-Trump and still be pro-Trump, given the fact that I know they're intelligent and I know they're reasonably well-informed? I don't know where they're informed, but they're reasonably well-informed. It's a puzzle to me. It's just one of those things that I really, really need to try to figure out to my satisfaction, if possible. Okay, we have three callers on the line. Bob, I believe, is working on a fourth. I'll do a quick ID so I don't have to interrupt Jerry. You're listening to Thinkwing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My website is thinkwingradio.com. My Twitter is at thinkwingradio, and you can support KPFT by going to kpft.org, hopefully, you know, going to the donate, hopefully picking Thinkwing Radio and contributing whatever you can, whether it's a one-time gift, whether it's large or small, whether it's supporting and ongoing, whatever you can manage, we appreciate. Okay, so we've done the ID. Jerry, you are on the air. Thanks for calling. How are you doing tonight?
How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. You know, I try to watch the news so, like, my family doesn't have to.
Oh, boy. Anyway, well, I don't know. I think that you got to understand that, like, I saw some kind of article that actually said 10% more Americans in favor favor impeaching Trump than support him.
Yes. And, I mean, the number of people who don't like him, his negatives are very high. But there seems to be a core group of around 35%. And I have to tell you, that number doesn't shock me. But there is a core group of about 35%, and I think that that mirrors what you find in other countries that have people that seem to go toward leaders with authoritarian proclivities. Is that enough? I guess the question I posed, how many Americans does it take for Trump to become a strongman? It doesn't necessarily take a majority, so the question is how big a plurality?
That's a good question, actually.
It's a damn good question, and I have not heard anybody else pose it. But I think it's something that social scientists, political scientists, and statisticians need to be thinking about.
It's probably something that they have worked on and all that, but I just don't remember any studies of that myself in reading up on that. But I'll try to check into that.
Well, what got me thinking was that article that I don't know that I really got to much last week. I think I mentioned it, the article from the Washington Post, as Trump wages war on the media, the echoes of Erdogan grow louder, and basically talked about the similarities in how they conduct their public selves in terms of trying to accrue power and credibility to themselves and discredit other sources and other movements.
Well, I don't know. Inevitably, reality discredits these guys eventually.
Not necessarily. You know, think of Papa Doc Duvalier. Think of Assad, not Bashar, his father, Hafez al-Assad. You know, he was president for life, and then he died, and his
Daddy
son
Assad,
is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does happen. And
no, but
you can't say it can't happen here.
Well, what I would say is that basically you've got to have at least the passive, you've got to have at least the passive compliance of the majority of people to really make that work in an economic sense.
You've got to have supporters, and you've got to have people that just don't want to be involved, don't want to make waves, and don't want to attract attention to themselves.
Exactly.
So you've got you've got the minorities on each end.
Yeah. But, you know, you really do, you know, I think in another year or two, some of that support will be gone. Maybe not all, you know, not all of it by any stretch of the imagination, but
I hope it doesn't take
I mean,
that
there was
long.
A significant number of people that were still supporting Richard Nixon. I remember somebody talking about this because of Trump. Actually, like, you know, around 30% of the people who are close to it are still in favor, still supporting Richard Nixon when he got, when he resigned.
I don't doubt that. And again, that comes back to my 40-20-40, or, you know, you can adjust the numbers 38-24-38. That already sounds like, you know, anyway, but this is what I'm talking about. There is always that small number that will always support whatever this Republican does, whatever their party guy does, they'll rationalize a way to support it. Now, Rachel, and I actually have my lines full, so we're going to have to keep this a little short,
okay.
but I'll give you a last word.
Okay.
Rachel made a point. She showed a survey that Democrats, regardless of what the messaging is, Democrats tend to be much more consistent in what they believe. If they're pro-Russia, anti-Russia, pro-Bernie, anti-Bernie, pro-Hillary, anti-Hillary, whatever it is their position is, party messaging doesn't seem to affect the numbers much. Whereas with Republicans, the party messaging seems to move the base in terms of their responses to opinion polls much more and much more rapidly. So you have people that were totally anti-Russia, and now all of a sudden 49% of Republicans think that Russia should be an ally. We should consider them an ally.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But it's not only ridiculous, which of course it is, but it's concerning, it's curious, and you have to wonder what it is about the liberal mind versus the conservative mind, if these statistics are accurate, that makes the liberal mind much more resistant to being messaged into another opinion versus the conservative mind, which seems much more willing to follow what I may loosely call, forgive me, marching orders.
Well, I don't know. I think that, for one thing, I think if you actually looked at the details on those numbers, I think you'd be appalled at the level of education that a lot of those people have. And
but they can vote.
Yeah, they can vote. Yeah, you don't have to be able to read write to vote. All you got to do is show up with the right paperwork and an ID, and yeah, you can go vote. But the thing about it is. I just want to make one other point, and this is in relation to Trump, actually, too. Egberto Willie, who has a show on Thursday, he had a great thing by a guy.
Yeah, Politics Done Right. Let's give him the plug. Politics Done Right, Thursdays at 3.
Interesting. But he had a great thing on his website. It's a guy with Australian television. It was like ABC in Australia or whatever.
I've seen that. I've seen that video. I've posted that video, yeah.
Yeah, that video sums up what's really wrong with Trump and why we're going to wind up in trouble. I'll be honest with you, I'm not so worried about economic decline under Trump. What really concerns me is the likelihood that we'll go to war sometime over the next 3.5 years.
Even if it's not war, I think he will diminish our influence in the world to a point that we will never quite recover from.
Well, I'll just say one other thing, and that is I actually have switched a bunch, you know, this is reading I would have gotten around to anyway probably, but I've actually deliberately gone and started studying up more on military and security matters and because of him and everything. So anyway, let me let you go. I'll talk to you later.
All right. I appreciate your calling as always. Take care. Okay. We've got an open line. At this point, I'm committed to trying to get everybody on the line on the air. So 713-526-5738. We have one open line. Is it Tony that's next up, Bob? Is it Johnny? Johnny. Okay. Because Tony had the green, and I thought that was him. But Tony, you'll be next. Johnny, how you doing? You're on the air.
Hi, General Practitioner of Radio, Mike Koenig. How you doing?
I'm okay. So what's on your mind tonight?
Well, something you said at the top of the show made me think about something that irks me. I heard on Living on Earth this past Saturday. But real quickly, this thing with the voting base on the far right, liking the Russians, all of a sudden, I don't think it's been all of a sudden. I think we've been building up to this a long time. I remember back when Clinton was in his first term, or just before he took office, the popular media in our country were really gathering some kind of sympathetic resonance for the American people with the Russian people. Do you remember when they were comparing Vietnam vets and their woes with the Russian veterans of the war with Afghanistan and their woes?
Well,
that's when it all started. I remember that.
I have to tell you, in the early 1990s, I believe that the West missed a golden opportunity to tie Russia more closely to the West. And I think that's because, in large part, the conservatives that took over Congress in 94 wanted to punish Russia as a defeated enemy. It was like Versailles all over again. And I think we missed an opportunity of maybe 5 or 8 years where, if we had handled things differently, the whole Russia story might have gone very, very differently. But we screwed up. We wanted to punish and humiliate, or the Republicans, so essentially us, wanted to punish and humiliate Russia. And this is what we earned. I mean, it was like Germany all over again.
The problem is not just on our side. They have their versions of Republicans over there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
The people right now, you see footage of Russians in the current day, when they show these middle-aged white guys in Russia with their biker jackets and all. That's mm-hmm. their equivalent to the bikers here in Lamarck who go to that place down near the, petrochemical plant. There's a hangout for them over there. It's the same thing.
People are the same all over, and I am not saying that everybody in Russia was looking to us to help them, waiting to be friends with us, because obviously it's much more complicated. You still had old-line communists who wanted to bring back Soviet Russia. I mean, yeah, it was complicated, but we had Yeltsin in power. He was basically pro-Western. He had his problems, but he was basically pro-Western. And I mean, I don't know what the full answer was. I don't know if a Marshall Plan equivalent from like the United States and Europe would have made a difference. But I think whatever the economic and technical assistance, I think treating them as a defeated enemy the way the Allies treated Germany, we reaped what we sowed. We ended up with another enemy again.
That's right. We keep doing the same thing over and over again, and we allowed that to happen when Senator McCain went over with Lindsey Graham. I don't know why they did that. I don't know why somebody didn't say, hey, what are you doing? What you're doing is arguably against our interest. Why are you doing this? And caused that funding for ISIS to be created by Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's... The Middle East is a very, very messy place.
But anyway, at the top of your show, you said something, I can't remember what it was, but it brought me to a pet peeve of mine, language.
Living things. Jargon.
An NPR-type program.
Undefined jargon.
They had this segment on Thoreau. But the way the academic that they were interviewing pronounced his name, and the way the female reporter pronounced his name, they both pronounced his name as Thoreau. It just irritates me.
Yeah, I get it. I do.
I mean, it's all part of it. I can't blame Trump, but I'm tempted to, because it seems like it's okay now to lower our standards here and there to annoy liberals like me. And that's another thing I hate about living under this austerity program of the Republicans, because everything declines, especially the awareness level of our people.
Yeah, poor education works in favor of the Republicans.
You do a great job.
Thank you so much, Johnny. I appreciate it. Take care. And when the Republicans are deciding on Texas textbooks, history texts, they always want to pick glowing renditions of American history. You know, whatever we teach our people, whether it's true or not, people elsewhere are learning their versions. One of my favorite stories is the War of 1812. Everybody is taught that the British burned Washington, D.C. Very few people know why the British burned Washington, D.C. They didn't just come in and decide to burn Washington. Our troops had gone into Canada and burned their capital of York. Strictly a retaliatory mission. Even the park ranger at the Battle of New Orleans site, where I raised this issue when he brought up the topic of the burning, he said, oh yeah, not only is that true, but he said also the British made an effort to only burn government buildings. Now, of course, fire spreads, but they only set fire to government buildings. It was a very specific, targeted, retaliatory response. They burned and they left. How many people know that part of the story? I think that's really important when you're talking about history. Okay, Bob is telling me to go faster. Tony, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How are you doing tonight?
I'm very good, very good. Thank you for taking my call. You're exactly right. You're quite right. It wasn't retaliation, but you're right.
The Canadians remember that, and we don't.
They do, yes.
And it's important.
Yes, they do. They do. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I grew up right over the Detroit River from Windsor. We grew up literally watching Canadian news, Canadian history, on local television in the olden days before they had cable. And I learned quite a lot growing up about Canada. It's a marvelous country. They have their faults, of course.
They have their history, and their history is deeply intertwined with ours and vice versa. And trying to flavor the history to make us look a little better and to make them look a little worse is pointless. They know their history.
Yeah, and that's the reason why Texas school books on history want to do that. And they're notoriously racist anyway. So to be very honest with you, it's really just anybody who believes what they read in these Texas school books, it really gluttons for punishment, but that's their own business. I wouldn't let my children read that stuff. And if they were required, I would certainly make sure as a parent that they had the actual truth.
We need to teach our people in school the good, the bad, and the ugly. We can emphasize that, you know, essentially we try to be good as nations go, but we need to know, our people need to know why other nations view us a certain way. Well, and whitewashing, to use a phrase, our history, isn't going to accomplish that. We're just going to have enemies without even understanding why.
Well, that's not important to the people who teach you that stuff. They don't want you to know why.
No.
They
think that they have to give you the best version of American history to make you a true patriot.
Well,
lies notwithstanding.
That also keeps you ignorant, because if you believe them on that, you believe them in everything they tell you.
Well, yeah, you could argue that.
That's exactly right. But as far as your comment on the Chronicle, I mean, the Chronicle is probably the worst newspaper in the world. I haven't bought a Chronicle in 20 years. Those are not the stories you read in the Chronicles are reprinted. Those people are not reporters or journalists or anything like that.
Well, the local stuff, you know, I think the local stuff.
Yeah, the local people, they're sitting there in front of their computer downtown, and they copy stories. That's why they didn't have the definition of that acronym that you mentioned, because it's not important to them. They really don't care. They just are people that they hire straight out of college and so forth, and they pay them little, and they reprint stories. That's what they really do.
And really, you know, the writer was partly responsible, but this had to get past an editor, and the editor should have known better.
Yeah, but the editor doesn't care, because number one, they do not believe that the average person is smart enough, and then secondly, they don't believe the average person really cares.
Thanks for making me feel better.
It's a terrible newspaper. It's nothing in it at all.
It is a terrible newspaper. I'm not going to say it's the worst, because that's a very declarative statement. But it's pretty worthless.
It's on the list of the worst, whatever that list may be.
I have compared the Chronicle to a little neighborhood paper that happens to just cover the whole city.
That's probably the best thing. You know, it's a lousy paper.
It's a lousy paper.
But I'll also make a comment on your friends that you mentioned about Trump.
Mm.
You know, people like your friends consider him to be the great white hope. I mean, there's always been the great white hopes in American culture and in American history. So they consider him to be the great white hope. Yes, we had a black president for 8 years. And so, you know, a lot of the things that he did, some people didn't like, some people did like. But the point of the matter is Trump has told every person that is feeling squeezed, feeling betrayed, hurt, feeling less respected, feeling less wealthy.
It's people of color.
I beg your pardon?
It's people of color. It's brown people. It's black people. It's foreign people.
Your life uncomfortable, and I will satisfy all of you and make you great again, where you don't have to worry about political correctness if you're working with somebody of a different ethnicity. If you feel like saying, you know, I knew a guy who was a real lousy creep, and he was a thief, and yeah, he was your ethnicity, so what? They don't want it. You should be able to say it because that's the way you feel. Needless to say, they buy it because they think that all the miseries that will come will go to those people.
And the question then becomes again, which I posed, how large a minority do you need for Trump to be an effective strongman?
No, I disagree with that. There is a large majority of individuals who feel that way. It's not a minority at all.
I am hopeful. I don't agree with you.
I disagree with you on that. It's a large majority, and I'll tell you this.
The polls say no. The polls say that that's incorrect, and I am hopeful, and I trust the polls in that regard.
Well, nobody ever called and asked me my opinion on the poll.
I have occasionally gotten. But be that as it may. Tony, I'm going to let you finish up. If you want to take...
Well, yeah, but the misery is going to be shared by everyone, including you, who think that it's only going to be them. Because when he cuts Medicaid, millions of whites, children won't be able to get their asthma treatments. They won't be able to get their treatments for diabetes. They won't be able to get their treatment for autism. They won't be able to get their treatment for a lot of things. And then guess what? Little Johnny is going to just bounce off the walls until he bounces into oblivion.
Well, now, just FYI, I happen to believe that we probably should go to single payer. So, you know.
Of course we do, but the healthcare industry for profit will never allow that to happen. And in America, people wanted a business president. They wanted a guy who was a businessman.
Yep.
And in business people care nothing for the individual. They care about themselves and profits.
Top-tier executives.
Johnny has to die because the insurance companies don't want a single payer, Johnny will die.
I believe the top-tier executives tend to lean more towards sociopathic tendencies, essentially not having much of a conscience, not having
much
empathy.
People. Conscience has nothing to do with business. You've been a businessman all your life. I certainly have been a business person all my life. I've worked in the corporations. I work in the corporations now. They care nothing for the individual.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
I would agree with that. I think that's truer of large companies than small companies. I think we need to draw a distinction. You know, large companies that become disconnected from the people near the bottom, I think, yeah, they're just statistics.
Well, name a company that is not disconnected from the people at the bottom. You think that Comcast really cares whether or not
Well, Comcast is a big company.
No,
wait a second. Comcast is a
month?
Well,
so
but I'm not talking about a company like Comcast. I'm talking about like a guy who maybe owns
Energy.
No, I'm not talking about them either. Those are big companies. I'm talking about a guy like who owns three pizza stores. Or a guy who owns a couple of garment stores.
Mm-hmm.
Or a guy who maybe owns a burglar alarm installation business and has five
mm-hmm.
people working for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, those kinds of businesses, you're dealing with your baseline people all the time. And it's, I think, they have to make business decisions, but I think it's harder for them to be really disconnected from the human beings that work for them.
That might be true, but in the long run, it doesn't matter except for those four or five people that are working for them. The vast majority of the masses out here take no notice, and they can't do anything for them anyway.
Well, the vast majority of people have jobs with very large companies that are disconnected from the workers. Anyhow, I got to let you go,
Tony.
Thank
you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner's on controls. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org. clicking on donate, hopefully choosing Think Wing Radio, contributing whatever you can afford, either as a one-time gift or an ongoing contribution. And we would appreciate whatever it is you can contribute to help support this station, which runs 24/7, 365, and occasionally 366 every 4 years. Okay, and my website, thinkwingradio.com, Twitter, @ThinkWingRadio. I like to think that I have an interesting timeline. And Greg, you are up next. You're on the air. How you doing, Greg?
All right, Mike. I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But I went to the healthcare rally today at City Hall with Congressman Lee and some of the people that were there.
Cool.
And I'm going to say this to all of my progressive brothers and sisters.
Okay.
We can't stop now. We can't. We got too much work ahead of us to sit back. If this election did anything, if it's awakened us, if it's energized us, if it's made us ready to fight, then we shouldn't just be fighting in 2018. We ought to be fighting in 2020 and beyond for the things that matter to us.
It's hard for human beings to keep up intensity at a constant level.
True.
But you're right. You have to at least manage those surges where you can let people down and recoup and regenerate and then get them energized again. And, you know, I wish that I was one of those people that could go out and walk and protest. Walking, not so much my thing these days. I do what I can here, you know, passing along information, thoughts, exchanging ideas, and hopefully I make some small difference in that regard.
I think what we got to do as a society is, folks, we got to get more educated about some of these issues. We can't just follow blindly because someone tells us something.
That's true.
We gotta find out on our own.
And even a lot of the progressive so-called news sources, I mean, they're really news sources of questionable quality. They're really mostly editorial content.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's from the right or the left, you have to, A, be choosy about where you get your information, and B, be smart about what that information is, how it's presented, and whether it's actually information or just editorialism.
And I would ask all of us when we listen, whether it's here at KPFT, I hope we just start asking the kind of questions that we need to all the time, whether it's health care, income inequality, whatever the situation is. We've got to get better at this because this is affecting people who are millennials, senior citizens.
People need to take it upon themselves to be well-informed. They can't rely on just tuning into the broadcast networks or the cable news networks. You have to seek out good information. There's a lot of information literally around the world. A lot of news organizations that have less national bias and are a little more objective, good, bad, and ugly. And you need to seek that stuff out in order to really understand and make a coherent picture of what is going on in your community, your state, your country, your world.
And I think when we seek that information out, I mean, I was remembering that I listened to NPR right after the election. They went to York, Pennsylvania. This illustrates the point we're both making. There was an African-American man who had talked to this one woman, and she had never thought about the slogan, Make America Great Again, mm-hmm. and what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
And when he pointed out that in people of color communities, they know what it means because you're basically saying make America white again. And until he brought that up.
Make people of color second-class citizens again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And until he brought that up, she had never thought about that. Never gave it. She said, well, I thought about making America stronger and greater again. And then there was this older African-American lady who followed him that said, look, she had been head of the school board in York. She's a retired educator. And she said, that's part of the problem because if I've got a slogan that to some people is just generic, hey, make America great again, that sounds great.
Sounds great.
Because nobody's going to put two and two together and equal four. But if you take the time and realize how many times in our political and social life those statements have come back to energize a certain segment, that ought to wake us all up to say, why are these people wearing these caps saying make America great again? It's because they want a system that will never change.
Okay.
That they can still have what they thought they used to have, whether it's having a better income.
Greg, I'm going to ask you to wrap up so I can catch some of the other folks.
All right. And I'll just quickly say this. If this doesn't wake you up in the last 6 months and before what you've seen, I don't know what will, but I hope this does.
Well, I'm with you. All right. Take care, Greg. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay, next up is MOD. MOD, hi. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Quiet so far, Mike?
Well, I wouldn't say so. The lines are full, so I think that's the opposite of quiet.
I'm sorry. And abrasive so far. Okay.
No, people are expressing their opinions. I haven't had anyone abrasive yet. Are you going to be my first?
No way, Jose.
Thank you. So what do you got?
So we're all sort of trying to, I think the general thought with the callers and a lot of people these days are like, what's going on? Is that safe to say, Mike?
I think a lot of people are scratching their heads, yes.
Yeah, man. And so am I. And I'm thinking,
no one in our lifetime has seen the situation with us on the world stage that we're seeing now, let alone the domestic stage.
Yeah, so I'm digging like everybody else. And, you know, I think that fake thing, I think we got to call it fake media, Mike, instead of fake news, because what's proven, what collusion has been proven, only of that of the DNC and Wasserman Schultz or Brazil or Rodman in the media, that's been proven because those chairs had to step down.
Well, now, you're not going to deny that there is a lot of evidence in the public domain. And, I mean, all evidence is evidence until it's...
How can I phrase this? Sort of like, hey, man, fire, you know, we got Bernie out of the way, now you got to take the...
What about the stuff between Trump and Russia and Trump associates in Russia and Trump associates with Russians that are associated with, what is it now, the FRB used to be KGB, and the fact that they Kushner wanted a back channel that he could use from the Russian embassy just to make sure. I mean, come on now. You can't just constantly be pointing fingers at the Democrats. What we have going on with the Republican Party.
I would say, or ask you this. Who do you think the bigger globalist, the Foundation or Trump? Do you think Trump's that big of a globalist?
Define what you're calling a globalist.
Someone who operates, you know, the government here, especially in this republic. And how things get done.
Okay, that's not a definition.
To Trump's level, he's just a snake oil salesman that's the right clown at the right
okay,
time.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of pointed questions, and then we're going to have to move along, I think.
I want to ask you, can I get 5 minutes like everybody else?
Well, they haven't been getting 5 minutes, but you can get another couple of minutes.
Okay, go ahead. Your point question.
Oh, okay. My question was, do you perceive a diminishment of the respect the world has for us and a diminishment of our role and influence in the world under Trump?
How about this, Mike?
Whoa. No, you don't answer a question with a question. I asked you a question.
Okay, so I would say after 16 years of democracy, Mike, U.S. war, are we that stupid that all of a sudden here comes this TV show clown on the scene all of a sudden, and after 16 years of democracy at gunpoint, drawings, you know, the last covenant, the last 8 years was Middle East, kill everybody?
You're not answering my question.
Okay, what was your question again?
My question was, under Trump, do you see a diminishment of respect for the U.S. and U.S. influence in the world just in the last several months that Trump has been in office?
No greater than the last 16 years of democracy at gunpoint. Are we that stupid? And I found it. It's called the Overton window.
I think you keep pivoting off the question.
No. I'm saying we have resentment, Mike, far greater than we just care to discuss in this format here.
There's a lot of resentment.
And all of a sudden, here's somebody who's the right clown to carry the bag of goods to the pier.
Do you think he's being good for the country?
I think he's convenient because he has no actual right to be there. Why would Trump be there other than to clean up something that's already been going on for some time, especially...
I have to say, I mean, forgive me. I know that you have an agenda, and that's fine. I don't
agenda of what is saying that there's something wrong before Trump got there.
I mean, you have an ideology, and that's fine. I respect that. You know,
you don't think the world doesn't like us?
But
before what we've
but
been
here's
doing
the
for
thing:
the
you're
years?
Not answering my questions with answers. You're answering my questions with screeds.
Well, I'm answering your question that Trump is not relevant. Is what I'm trying to say to what the world already thinks of us, Mike.
So you don't think that Trump has caused the world to look to the United States less, to treat us with less respect, to fear us less, to listen to us less, I mean, normally the president goes in the middle of that G20 picture, and he was all the way at the end. And there's all kinds of protocols and stuff that made that happen, but if they didn't want it to happen, it wouldn't have happened. He was out of the discussions. Nobody wanted to talk to him. Putin manipulated him. You don't feel that, and this is, again, this is a direct question. You don't feel that Trump, in just his short time in office, regardless of whatever meta things are going on in terms of cabals and other things,
no.
You don't think that he has had a specifically deleterious effect on the United States standing in the world?
He's here to blow it up, Mike.
I'm sorry, say again?
He is here. He's there where he's at to blow it up.
I agree with that.
And we're not. I hate arguing the result with. And if I can get one thing in.
Okay, go ahead.
And that's called. If you look up Wikipedia, and it's called the Overton window, where you take a populace, and you take their academic, and you basically get them conditioned to agree to narratives that they don't argue anymore. I would really, it'd serve justice for everyone on the call or anyone that's listening to go look up this paper done by this guy. His name's Overton. It's called the Overton Window.
Okay.
And what he spells out is how you can take what we call intellectuals yet idiots. You know, Trotsky called them useful liberal idiots, right? And who are Trotskys? Those are neocons. Right. I think even Gary Beck.
You've had 7 minutes, and I got 3 more callers. Will you forgive me if
so
I let you go?
Leave with this: that if you can have the intellectual of a society or republic to agree to arguments like Trump, there's the win. Because soft power is what Gene Sharp does for. Rancor. That's what they've been doing in the
okay.
Middle East, Mike, for the last 16 years.
I got to let you go.
Look
we can continue this next
stuff.
Time. Thank you so right. much, MOD. Bye. Take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is how you support us. Brad, you're next up. And you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. You really got a startup tonight.
Yeah.
But, well, it's the startup days. Hey, have you ever heard that show that plays on 88.7, that's once a week, sometime in the evening, and I don't remember which days, but it's BBC. It's called The Fifth Floor.
That specific one. I have occasionally listened to BBC late night when I'm driving around.
Yeah, well, they have one show that they play weekly. It's called The Fifth Floor, and what it refers to is the fifth floor of their BBC building, where they have the translators who do all their world service, their various outreaches. And what they do is, in that show, I think it's a half hour or 1 hour, but they go up to these people, and they pull a person from this language or that language and ask them, you know, what's the word on the street, or they interview them, if you will. And a few weeks ago, they went to them, and they said, basically, the topic was, what about Trump? Or they asked, how does Trump's, how does his speech and his presentation, how does it resonate with people overseas and such? And the responses were interesting and revealing and kind of in line with that first article that you brought up. You had a lot of people saying, yeah, he is the classic third world dictator. He's the classic third or second world strongman. The Iranian translator said he's Ahmadinejad in his speech patterns, in terms of what he, not only politically and emotionally, what he appeals to, but also just the speech patterns, the his rambling, if you will, was that of the third world dictator. And strongman. So I thought it was pretty interesting in keeping with the discussion.
Okay, I've got two more callers, and I've got about 7 minutes. If you want to take another 30 seconds or a minute, I'll give it to you.
No, that's it. Just throwing it out there. But yeah, he's a regression for the U.S., we'll put it that way.
He's incredibly unpopular around the world, like under 20%.
I'll tell you one thing, though. Anecdotally, okay, there are many folks from overseas in the Houston area who were supportive of him.
Yes.
And it's the people who come from cultures who want the strongman.
Yes.
And I won't get into how I know that, but he does have some support out there.
I won't get into how I know it either, but I agree with you.
Well.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Brad.
All right.
Take care. All right. We've got Tom. I'm sorry. We've got
Hello?
Scott.
I'm Scott.
Scott, I'm sorry. I got confused
you.
Who was next. Okay, you've got 2 minutes.
Yes. I want to put your question another way. Do we have enough people in the right places to thwart a dictatorship?
We're hoping.
Pardon?
We're hoping.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see. We have at least five Supreme Court justices, I think. Maybe six. Maybe more than that.
Well,
on some things.
I mean, here's what gives me hope. The media, always looking for a good story, you know, first they were pro-Trump because he was great entertainment, and now they're basically digging because this is what they do. They build him up, they tear him down. So at least now they're kind of working on that side.
Okay.
You've got 17 intelligence agencies which communicate with other intelligence agencies around the world, and they've learned not to share a lot of their information with Trump, but they have it, and they use it. We have what is now, I was reading an article now called the fourth branch of government. We've always been taught that there's the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary, and now they're saying that the bureaucracy is really a fourth branch, and in the presence of a weak president, the bureaucracy gets strong, much like the Congress in the event of a weak president gets strong. So you've got a lot of people in the bureaucracy that are fighting him, which is one of the reasons why he's tried to hollow out the departments so badly. But then you get down to the civil service people. They're not so easy to get rid of, and they are career people. So, I mean, I am hopeful. I am crossing my fingers. But I think that we will survive this. But I think that internationally we will be permanently damaged.
Okay. Well, internationally, I don't know about that. This country got a lot more prestige under Obama, and now it's lost a lot of it under Trump.
Obama recovered a lot of what was lost under Bush.
Yeah,
but I think this is a new kind of deal.
Down. For example, I saw a poll, I think it was about 5 countries in Europe, and I was pleasantly surprised with Poland. I thought a majority respected us better under Obama, and a minority respected us under Trump. I thought Poland would be the exception, if any of those countries.
Well, Poland right now has kind of a right-wing,
yes, it does,
possibly authoritarian-leaning government.
There was a sign made up of lights on their Palace of Science and Culture in Warsaw. It said, "No Trump, yes Paris."
Well, the world right now is a complicated place and is very, very much in flux on a lot of meta scales and micro scales.
Yeah. Oh, back when in the middle 2000s, some people in Germany tried to give me a hard time about Bush. And I could say, ich weiß nicht für Bush. I did not vote for him.
I went through that when I visited China. It's like, don't blame me for Bush.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't me.
Yeah.
All right, I got to let you go. You want to give me something for 30 seconds, and I'm going to go on to Tom.
I believe I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Scott, for calling. Appreciated. Okay, I think the last caller is going to be Tom. You're on the air, Tom. Thanks for waiting. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike, and how are you?
Okay, you've got about 2.5 minutes, so I'm going to try not to interrupt.
Got it. Okay, let's go back to the weekend when the revelation of Kushner, Jr., and Manafort were supposed to meet that lawyer, allegedly meet the lawyer. And I don't know if that's fake news or not, but it sounds like they tried to. And since they said it did actually happen.
There seemed to be some confirmations that it actually happened.
Say again?
There seemed to be some confirmations from multiple sources is what I'm getting, that yes, that meeting did happen and it was not reported.
Right. And at the same time, what out of Junior's mouth, he said that we were supposed to meet the lady that may have some dirt on Hillary Clinton. That was before
the election.
November, December.
No, that was before the election.
Okay,
that was like something like August. Yet. And lawyers are saying that that's as good as a confession of collusion.
Correct. And do you remember the two people that were executed for treason in the World War II? Rosenthal's or Rosenstein's?
Oh, not you mean after the you're talking about like in 1955 the
right.
Yeah,
right. Well, they were literally executed
for passing nuclear secrets to the Soviet Union.
Correct. Now, it has been reported that he was telling Russians secrets of ours.
That who was telling
secrets? We're supposed to know.
The Rosenbergs.
Right. Well, and same thing with Trump.
Oh yeah, yeah. Which,
if the Rosenbergs were executed, then it goes to the fact that if Trump and his son were trying to deliberately destroy somebody else so they could actually gain the presidency, that would have been treasonous against the United States and the electoral.
Well, let me say this, and I'm going to sort of wrap it up, and then maybe I'll give you a couple of seconds for a couple of words, but. It is very unusual for the United States to execute people for treason. The Rosenbergs were a special case because they had given the Soviet Union the atomic bomb, and it was felt that they had literally created an existential threat to the United States. Usually, people convicted of treason in American history, usually they just get really long prison sentences.
Understood. But at the same time, isn't affecting our election the way we elect people, isn't that a same thing as giving somebody a nuclear bomb, except on the Internet?
Well, I'm going to say no, and unfortunately I need to say goodnight to you because I have to sign off.
That'll be fine. You have a good one, Mike.
Thank you. You too, Tom. Thank you so much. Okay, quote that I want to share tonight is from Speaker Paul Ryan from January 24th, 2017. Ryan said, I've seen no evidence to the effect that millions of people voted illegally. I've made that very, very clear. Just thought I would toss that out there. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much to the callers. That always makes the show more interesting. For some reason, last week I said I'll see you Friday, but I'll see you Monday. I will see you Monday. Thanks so much for calling. Take care.
Tune in to KPFT on the second Tuesday of every month from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for Q&A Tuesday, a call-in program hosted by the 24 members of KPFT's local station board. Q&A Tuesday provides a medium for Houstonians to ask local station board members questions pertaining to the activities of KPFT's local station board. To call in, dial 713-526-5738. On the second Wednesday of every month, join KPFT for its local station board meeting. This meeting, which is open to the public, takes place from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Montrose Center, 401 Bernard Street. At 8 p.m., attendees will have an opportunity to address LSB members. Visit kpftx.org. KPFT Houston.
KPFT Houston thanks our community partners, AIDS Foundation Houston, offering free HIV testing every Monday and Tuesday. More information at AIDSHelp.org. The Information to Freedom Institute, who will be hosting a 3-day Kundalini yoga workshop starting July 8th. More information available at eventbrite.com. And Houston Community College, HCC, offers a variety of degrees with fall enrollment now open. More information at hccs.edu.